And we're holding on page Nun Zayin in Nedarim Os Yud Gimel. We learned about how Hashem tells Avraham, "Halach lefanai ve'yesamim, be perfect before me." And Avraham was worried that that means that maybe he's lacking something. And Hashem told him, "No, it's just that you haven't had a bris milah yet. Now I'm giving you the mitzvah of bris milah." And then we learned also that Avraham had said to Hashem, "My mazal, based on my mazal, I'm fated to have only one child, and I already have Yishmael." And Hashem tells him, "No, ein mazal Yisrael." So now, continuing on that topic about the importance of a person being tumim with Hashem, and also, so it also relates back to that point about Hashem telling Avraham to be tumim. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, kol masmim es atzmo, a person who makes himself complete, a person who makes himself tumim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitamim imo, then Hashem will act with him in a tumimistic way. So one point of that in masmim atzmo means, in other words, that he's not constantly looking to try and figure out the future. Rashi, in fact, mentions on the pasuk tumim tia im Hashem alekecha, means don't always be looking and trying to forecast the future and everything. Just accept that the Eibishter runs the world and he knows what's best for you. So when a person acts with that kind of mentality, then Hashem acts in the same way reciprocally towards him. So again, it connects with this point before that Avraham was tamim im Hashem alekecha. So Marsha also connects it with the immediately previous part about that here Avraham had said to Hashem that it seems that my mazel doesn't allow me to have another child, and Hashem tells him ein mazel Yisrael. So this relates to that also. He's not listening anymore. He knows not to listen to all the stargazing and all of that. So Hashem, in fact, acted with him in a tumimistic way and changed his mazel. Even Yaakov points out another point as well. Another way of understanding it is, we can say, before we said that ein mazel Yisrael, now we might say that actually there is, Rabbi Yitzchok would say there is mazel for Yisrael, but Hashem will take him from under that mazel if he taka deserves it. The Gemara has a whole discussion in Masechta Shabbos whether yesh mazel Yisrael or ein mazel Yisrael. So the previous Gemara would have said ein mazel Yisrael. This one is saying, yes, there is mazel for Yisrael, but it can be, or it can, the Eibishter can transform it when a person deserves it. So that would be another connection between this and the previous part. Rav Oshia, kol ha-masim em es atzmo, shah ha-medisle. Rav Oshia says, also in this vein, a person who makes himself tamim, who works to make himself as perfect as possible in his midas, and tamim tiyeh ma-shem alekecha, that he's not looking to constantly worry about what's going to be in the future, but he trusts that the Eibishter is going to arrange it for him in the best possible way. Then the time will stand by him, meaning, in other words, that Hashem will arrange that things will happen to him at the proper time. It relates to this whole matter of mazel, because the Gemara, that same Gemara in Shabbos discusses the question, there's mazolis of the days of the week, and then there's mazolis of the individual hours of the day. As we know, this is why the whole thing not making Kiddush between 6 and 7 on Friday is based on the mazolis of the hours. So here we're saying that if a person is masmim es atzmoy, then shah imedisloy, the Eibishter arranges that his mazel shah will be for good, and if necessary, change that mazel. The months have mazalos, right, but then, yeah, there was that too, but then in the Gemara and Shabbos over there, it talks about a person is born on a particular day of the week, then he's influenced by a certain mazal, and a person is born in a certain hour of the day, he's influenced by a certain mazal, but then the Gemara discusses over there, does that apply across the board to Jews? Do we say ein mazal Yisrael, like we learned yesterday, or do we say yesh mazal Yisrael, or do we say ein mazal Yisrael? And as we talked about yesterday, in Chassidus, it talks about, in a way, kind of a reconciliation of it, ayin mazal Yisrael, our mazal is not based on the mazalos, like it is for everybody else, but rather it comes from a level of ayin, from a level of course, far beyond the mazalis. So now we're saying again that a person is masmim es atzmo, shah imedisloy, the hour stands by him. In other words, Hashem makes things happen for him at the proper time. And if necessary, Marashah says, that means also Hashem will change his mazel for good, the same way as we just said before that Hashem did with Abraham, where b'derech hateva, he wouldn't have been able to have more children, and Hashem arranged that he did. Shenema, as you find, his halach lefane ve'yesamim, Hashem tells Avraham, walk before me and be tomim, ochsiv, and a couple of sukkim later, Hashem tells him, v'yisal av hamoyim goyim, you will become a father of a multitude of nations. So in other words, the connection is, because he made himself tomim, because he trusted that whatever Hashem is going to do for him is right then, and he wasn't looking anymore at the stargazing and all that about what his future was going to be. Therefore, the Eibishter reciprocated and brought him higher than the mazel and made it that he would be able to have children, even though according to his natural mazel, he wouldn't have. So earlier also, before the Brisbane Absurdum, you also have the expression that Vehem in Vashem, that Avram trusted in Hashem, Vayachshavei Lo Tzedakah, and Hashem considered for him Tzedakah, that Hashem promises him, you're going to have children, and Avram didn't keep on asking, how do I know it's going to come true? He had total Amunah in Eivishtah, so that all relates to this as well. And the Gemara continues in this vein, Omer of Levi, or different Girsa Rebbe, Kol HaMenachesh, on the flip side of it, anybody who is Menachesh, anybody who's constantly looking for omens and signs and then Segulas and whatever of what's going to happen, Loi Nachash, then Nachash does in fact have an effect on him. And therefore, in other words, now if one time he gets careless and doesn't follow that thing, then he can end up getting in trouble and getting harmed. The Ran refers in this connection, for example, there's a whole sugya in Masechta Pesachim about the issue of zugos, where the Gemara discusses whether you're not supposed to eat and drink in even numbers, and it has a whole long sugya over there extending over a couple of blocks about it. And then in the end, after going through a lot of details about it, the Gemara points out, you know what the bottom line is: kol dekofid, man dekofid, kapdin and day, if a person is generally careful about this, and then one time he slips up, then he can be harmed by shadim or kishur for whatever the Gemara says over there that he's susceptible to. Whereas if to begin with he pays the whole matter no attention, then they won't bother him either. Which is why nowadays next to nobody is nizer, and now it's brought that the Minchas Elazar was careful with it, but almost nobody else is. So this is an example of kol menachash loy nachash. So if a person is into that kind of nichush, that he's always looking to see to make sure that he has everything arranged according to the simonim and according to the segulas and all and so on and so forth, then that means that those things will have an effect on him. But if he doesn't, then no. Shenemar, as we find, Kiloi Nachash V'Yakov, as we find, Bilam says in one of his brachas to the Jewish people, he says there's no Nachash in Yaakov. So now the Gemara asks, see, the problem with that is, if we understood, if the pasuk was written loy with a vav, then yeah, it would be ki loy nachash v'yakov. So there is for them nachash in Yaakov, and then we would learn this concept. Why do they have nachash? Because they themselves are looking for nachash. But here it says it with a lamed aleph. So it means the opposite. There was no nachash in Yaakov. So how does that teach us Rav Levi or Rebbe's point? So the Gemara says, fine, you're right, Elam Shem Midah Keneged Midah. It's not really based on the Pasuk, it's rather more just because we know that in general, the Eivishter judges a person Midah Keneged Midah, so we're not necessarily, the Mefarish explains over here, it's printed under Rashi's name, explains, it doesn't mean that in the end we're learning it from the Pasuk, it just means the Gemara is saying, you're right. How do we know? Rabbi Levi's point is because the Eivishter does Midah Keneged Midah. Now, Marsho, though, explains differently. That, first of all, and we always know that Eibishter does Midah Keneged Midah. There's no special thing about this. And the fact is that we did, after all, we brought a Pasuk. It's very strange for the Gemara to just say Ella, like, okay, we're going to ignore the Pasuk. The fact is, what are we doing with the Pasuk? So Maharsha explains what it means is, the very fact that the Eibishter does Midah Keneged Midah with this kind of thing is derived from this Pasuk. Namely, what happened? Bilam has been trying several times to curse the Jewish people. Now he realizes, it finally dawns on him, Kiloi Nachash V'Yakov. You know what? It's not going to be effective to do Nachash against the Jewish people, and therefore, up until now, he himself was using Nichush. Now, after this, the Pasuk says, V'loi Holach Kepam B'Fam V'Kras Nechoshim. He no longer tried to use Nichush. He no longer tried to use superstitious and magical methods to try and curse the Jewish people. Why? Because he realized now, Kila Nachash V'Yakov, the Jewish people don't pay any attention to such things, and therefore the Eibishter is not going to allow my Nichush to have any effect on them. And therefore, when he tried for the third time, then he gave up on his idea of using Nichush. So therefore, we can, in fact, learn from the Pasuk precisely because it says with Lamed Aleph, meaning Loi, there is no Nachash in Yaakov, and therefore he realized his Nachash is not going to help either. Another point also, Ian Yaakov makes a point that after all, the name Yaakov itself is suggests dishonesty. After all, you know, we have Esav complaining after Yaakov got the brachas by Yaakovini Zepamayim, he outsmarted me two times. So you would think that when the Jewish people are described under the name Yaakov, they're the type who are likely to use Nachash and to use superstitious and things like that to try and figure out the future. But no, but Bilam is stressing, no, Kiloi Nachash V'Yaakov, as a matter of fact, there is no Nachash even at the level of the Jewish people when they're called Yaakov, nevertheless there's not. And therefore, Bilam thinks to himself, my Nichosh is not going to do any good against them. So the Gemara continues in this vein, Toni Ava Breder Abzera, Kol Adam She'enim Menachash, anybody who is not Menachash, who again doesn't try to use various superstitious methods and skulas and all that to try and foretell or to try and influence the future, but rather he accepts that whatever the Eibishter is going to do for him is how it's supposed to be. Machnisin Oisil Mechitza Shafil Malachi Asharis Enim Yecholim Likonisla. He is brought in. His neshama will go in the Olam HaEmes into an area where even the Malachi HaSharif are not going to be able to come in there, meaning a level of very high closeness to Hashem. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Kila Nachash v'Yaakov. Remember this pasuk that starts that there's no Nachash, there's none of the superstitious stuff in Yaakov, and the pasuk continues. Ka'es, at a time like this, Ya'omer li'Yaakov li'Yisrael, there will be said to Yaakov and Yisrael, Ma Po'al Kael, what is Hashem doing? Which means the Malachi Asharis themselves are going to have to be asking the Jewish people, what is Hashem doing? Because they're not. There's an inner area over there where only the neshamas of such people are able to go, and even the malachim are not able to go there. So they're like stuck outside, and they have to ask the neshamas who are on the inside, so what's going on? What is the Eibishter doing? Now, the Ran explains, this is also part of Midah Kenegan Midah. He's not using Nachash, he's not trying to foretell the future. He trusts that Hashem will do whatever is right. Therefore, so Hashem reveals to him secrets that even the Malachi Asharis are not able to, achieve. So that's another point as well, that is not only, we're saying several things about this whole idea of nichush. Now, first of all, I mean, b'chlal, the Torah says that nichush is osur. So we're not even necessarily talking about the kind of nichush that's outright osur, like, for example, saying a black cat crossed my path and therefore I'm going to have an unlucky day. That's, that kind of thing is b'chlal osur. We're talking about more the kind of things that are mutter, like the kind of things that at least you have things like red strings, and you have things like various segulas and things like that. So we're saying that when a person does without those and just trusts in the Eibishter to do what's right for him, then we're saying that he has these, that the Eibishter treats him in a way where he's not affected by such nichush, and that he gets to be so close to the Eibishter, even closer than the Malachi Asharis. Ion Yaakov makes another point as well. The fact that he's not using Nechoshim and things like that implies that he wants to be under the direct control of Hashem rather than be subject to what Malachim and various other forces bring into the world. And therefore, he gets to be as close as possible. And therefore, he gets to be as close as possible to the Eibishter. In fact, he says this is the pasuk means Tamim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha can also be understood in that vein. When Tamim Tia, when you will be Tamim, meaning the opposite of Nachash, like this, then you will be Im Hashem Alekecha. You will be with Hashem, lifnim mimchitzasim, as we're saying over here, even closer than Malachim. Okay, getting back to Avraham Avinu now, let's talk about some more details involving Avraham. We talked about him in connection with Bris Milah, so now let's talk about some more details with him, with Bris Ben Absorim and everything with that. I forgot, by the way, yesterday when we were talking about Mila and Torah, I forgot to mention an interesting point. You know, by Bris, we say two brachas. You have the bracha, you have the bracha ala Mila, and then you have the bracha lachnisi b'bris shel Avraham Avinu. So why the second bracha? The first one is the birchas hamitzvahs, that's standard. But what's the point behind the second bracha? The Levush says an interesting idea. B'chlal, we know the ala mila, the moil makes the bracha ala mila, and then the father makes the bracha lachnis b'brisei. The Levush says a vort on it because it's not so much a bracha on the mila itself, it's that now that the boy has a mila, now that's a prerequisite as we tell the father. The father is saying, now we've done the part that makes it possible that later on we'll be able to be machnis, now done machnis, and that will be a prerequisite for him to be able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs later on in life. And in fact, there's an interesting thing in that connection. There was one time. Now in Shulchan Aruch it says if the father is not around by the bris for one reason or another, then the moyel says that bracha lachnisay. So there was a case actually involved where that was brought to Rabbi Akiva Eger where the father wasn't available for the bris, but the grandfather was there. And then the question was, should the grandfather say the bracha or should the moyel? So Rabbi Akiva Eger said, actually, yes, in that case, the grandfather should say it. Because the point is, again, the father is saying the bracha usually because he's the one who's going to be eventually teaching the child Torah. Well, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that the grandfather also has a mitzvah to teach his grandson Torah. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eger says, based on that lavush, then it should be the grandfather in that case who would make a bracha. Getting back to the Gemara, so Os Tesvav now. Omer Rabba Bohu, Omer Rabba Lazar. Mitnei ma nenesh Avram Avinu. Why was Avram Avinu punished that v'nishtabru bonav v'mitzkanayim masayim v'eser shonim, that his children, that his descendants, were enslaved for 210 years in Mitzrayim? Now, the Rosh asks the question, what do you mean? What do you mean, what did he do wrong? We know what he did wrong. He said, Bamo Eidaki Irashena. When the Ebishter tells him in Parshas Lech Lecha, you're gonna have children and they're gonna have descendants and Ani Hashem Asher Tisichem Urukastim and I'm gonna give you this land, then Abraham says, Bamo Eidaki Irashena. Now, on one level, Bamo Eidak can mean that Avram is asking, with what zchus are the Jewish people going to inherit Eretz Yisrael? And the Eibush answers him with the Bris Ben Absorim, which represents in the zchus of the Korbanos. So Rashi brings it on the pasuk. But another shade of meaning in Bamo Eda, or at least it sounds like, either it means this, or at least it sounds like it means this, that he's questioning and saying, how will I know that this promise is going to come true? So the Rosh says, well, that's reason enough for the Shibur in Mitzrayim. What is the Gemara even asking? So he says, fine, but the question is, let's go back a step. What is it that Avraham did something that wasn't quite right that caused that he should end up saying this wrong statement, Bamo Eda Ki Irashena, with the result that they went into Mitzrayim? So in other words, the Gemara is seeking the reason behind what got him to say Bamo Eda, what got him to say such a thing in the first place. Now, there's a footnote over here from Rav Shmuel Kedenover, who was a famous early Achron. He was a Rav in several important cities in Europe. He's the author of a major pirush on Seder Kodshim called Birkas HaZevach and other Sfarim. Anyway, he asks the question that we find elsewhere. So what is it? We're saying that, so the Gemara is going to answer because of something that happened during the war with Sdoim. Now, the question is, Tosfos explains elsewhere in Shas, in Brachas, that the Bris Ben Absorim, when Avraham says, Bamo Eda, and Hashem replies by telling him the Bris Ben Absorim, that happened when Avraham was 70 years old. The war with the kings, Tosfos calculates over there, happened when Avraham was 73. So that being the case, how can the Gemara be saying, if the Rosh is explaining that because he did something wrong in the war with Sdoim, therefore that led him to say Bamo Eda, and in turn that led to Golas Mitzrayim, well, how does that work out chronologically if the Bris Ben Absorim was before that, was 3 years before that war ever happened? So we'll go through a little bit of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about some of the answers that various Achronim give to find for that question. In any case, the question is, what did he do wrong that led him to say Bamo Eda, which in turn led to the Golas Mitzrayim? Marshall, though, points out, you don't really have to say that. The fact is, again, Bamo Eda does have another meaning as well. It can also mean, like we just said, Rashi brings on the Pasuk from a Medrash, from Bereishis Rabbah, that it means that what zchus will the Jewish people have to take over Eretz Yisrael? In that case, then fine, there's nothing wrong with that. And in that case, then the Gemara has to seek a different reason what went wrong over there. So the answer is, Mepnesha Osa and Gauya B'Tamed HaChamim. So the reason is, because he used Tamed HaChamim for forced labor. Angaria is a Greek or Latin word that means forced labor. So Shenema, we have by the war with the four kings, to save Loit and the rest of the people of Sodom over there. Vayorek es chanich of Yelidei, say. Vayorek, which the Gemara will explain soon what the word Vayorek means, but basically the Poshet Cha means that he mustered them together, he gathered them together. Es chanich of the ones whom he had educated. Yelidei Beisei, the ones who were born in his household. So these are his Talmidim, who he had taught about the Eivishter, and he had taught that he was teaching them Torah. Shmoina also was Shlosh Menes, 318 of them. Vayudith Adon, and he chased the four kings all the way to Don. So he shouldn't have done that. In other words, he should have, these people are learning Torah, and he shouldn't have taken them away from that to do this. As much as this is a matter of pikuach nefesh, nevertheless, he could have, for example, there were others that weren't learning Torah, he could have had them. Marsha points out, really what you have is first of all, the Ran points out, the fact that it calls them chanichav implies that he was mechanech them to Torah. Thus we see they were Talmid Chachamim. Marsha makes another point as well. The fact that the Pasuk calls them Yelidei Beisai, the ones who were born in his household, means that he taught them Torah, because as we know, the Gemara says in a few places that when a person teaches someone Torah, it's as if he fathered him. So either way, the point is these were Talmid Chachamim, and Avraham should not have taken them away from their learning Torah, even for this important purpose of fighting the kings and saving light. So that's one reason. So again, according to the Ran, the vort is, that according to the Rosh, rather, according to the Rosh, the vort is, because of that, that in turn led him to say Bamo'eda, which in turn led to the Golos in Mitzrayim, to the slavery of 210 years in Mitzrayim. According to Marsha, we don't need the middle step of Bamo'eda, because he did this, therefore there was a Shibud in Mitzrayim. So again, you have the Mahashak's question about the Seder of events. So first of all, Ion Yaakov points out that there are in fact different opinions about the order of events, and there is in fact an opinion in Medrash Rabbah that Bruce Ben Absorim was several years later, and in that case there's for sure no problem. But another point some of the Mephoshim make is, actually Eitz Yosef mentions a point, brings from Shavuos Yaakov, the fact that we see that he did this by the war with Sodom shows that it means that Avraham saw nothing wrong with it, and therefore we can assume, even though it's not recorded, that he did such things at other times as well, take the Talmid Chacham away from their learning Torah in order to do some other important job. So therefore, we could well say there was such a thing sometime before he was 70 by the Bris Ben Absorim, and therefore now this resulted that now he said Bamar Eda and everything went wrong from there. Of course, there's a big question anyway. I mean, for just saying for two words, Bamar Eda, therefore there's a whole Golos Mitzrayim from that. And by the way, what the Ran is saying over here, that's because he said Bamar Eda, and taking that in the sense that Bamar Eda is a negative thing to say, we have that actually in one of the piyutim that we say in davening on Rosh Hashanah as well. We have the piyut Oimet Zadiri Kol Chayfetz that we say in Musaf the first day. You have a line of it, the whole piyut is built on this idea that even the tiny little mistakes that Tzadikim made throughout the generations have tremendous consequences, and you have one over there that Val Omred Bamo'eda Avraham Avinu, because he said Bamo'eda Nidin Bekav Yodaya Teda, therefore he was judged strictly, and he was told Yodaya Teda, you're going to well know that your descendants are going to be enslaved in Eretz Mitzrayim. There's a famous idea in that the others are like the seed that the whole tree grows from, and therefore the seed has to be absolutely perfect, and if there's any flaw in it, then it's going to come out in the tree and in the fruit afterwards, and therefore that has to be worked out, and that would explain, in other words, why such a tiny little thing had such devastating consequences. Some of the Mephoshim have also learned, by the way, that the Gemara's question is not so much why there was the Shibud in Mitzrayim, but why Avraham had to be informed of it. Why does he have to be told in advance and have to have the tsar that this is going to have to happen to his descendants is because of this. So that's one answer.
Regarding that he took the Talmidei Chachamim to the fight, isn't that like an aloha by the Rambam that the Mechanas Mitzvah, you go out, whoever is...
Yes, but... That's true, but the Chosin Mechedra, the Kala Mechoposa, but not necessarily the Talmid Chachamim. We find in Baba Basra, for example, the Gemara mentions that when it comes to, for example, the defenses of the city, the Talmid Chachamim are not to be conscripted for such work because the Torah protects them. So in the same way over here, then we're talking about that, and Avraham had a large household. He had lots of other people. He didn't have to take Davka, these 318 who are learning Torah. So that's one answer. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar, another answer. Reb Shmuel, the words Rebbe and Bar Nachmeni are in parenthesis because of different Gersa in the printed Gemara. It's Shmuel saying this. Anyway, Mipnei Shehifriz Amidosef Shalach Kadosh Baruch Hu. Here's another reason why there was there the enslavement in the Mitzrayim is because he went beyond the midas of Hashem, meaning in other words he went too far in doubting Hashem. Hifriz is like prozis teish of Yerushalayim, means like he went to the Ran to translate it. Hifriz viter v'hifker, like he's overriding and he's making hefker the his words in front of the Eibishter. Shenemar, as it says, Vamo'eda ki Yiroshena. And again, we're taking that in the sense that he's saying Vamo'eda, that he's as if like he's doubting whether it's actually going to happen. The Rif actually makes a point over here. He says, if he had said Vamo'eda im Yiroshena, then that would have been bad enough. Then Avraham himself would have been held responsible for that. But now he went even worse. Vamo'eda ki Yiroshena, which means I know that I'm going to inherit it, but what children do I know that I'm going to have children where they're going to eventually inherit it? So that's really Hifri Zamidosev, says Shmuel. That's really going above and beyond and doubting the Eidosh's promises, because he had just told him that he's going to have children. So therefore, because of that, then it ended up coming out on his children as well, and they ended up going to Mitzrayim.
Because the Eva says, Hashem said that if Moshe wasn't like the others.
Right, that's true. In Parshas Va'era, right, that Moshe wasn't like the others because they never doubted Hashem's promises. Right, I guess Shmuel wouldn't necessarily agree with that point, because according to him, at least the statement by Mo'eda sounds like a little bit of a doubt. Yeah. Okay, that's a good point, yeah. All right. So that's the second reason. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan gives a third reason. Because Avraham prevented people from coming under the wings of the Shekhinah. In other words, there was a time when he had an opportunity to bring people into his household and teach them about the Eidoshter, and he gave up that opportunity. Shenemar, after the war with Sodom, the king of Sodom tells him, after the war with the four kings, when he saves Sodom and the whole group over there in Lot, the king of Sodom tells him, ten li anefesh, give me back the souls, meaning the people, and you can keep the wealth for yourself. And Abraham says, I'm not keeping any of the wealth, hadi mosi yadi. Now, though, the point is that, so Abraham returned all of the property, but he also returned all the captives. He shouldn't have done that. He should have said, them I want to keep, because I want to teach them about the Eidoshter. So instead, he gave up this opportunity, and he would have been legally able to, because he had saved them, so in effect, they were Hefker. So he had the chance to do that, and we know until now he was doing that. Avraham Magairus Anoshim, Sodom Magairus Anoshim. So here he missed this opportunity. In fact, there's an explanation what does that have to do with the Jewish people going down to Mitzrayim? Well, we see that Mitzrayim in Golus Mitzrayim, so when they came out, the Tekken came out with an Eid of Rab. So in other words, that sort of made up for that missed opportunity from hundreds of years earlier of Avraham Avinu, that now Tekken, they brought out many people with them, many Mitzrayim who were Tekken motivated to join the Jewish people because of what they saw with the Makkos and all that. More on the topic of that war with the four kings and then the 318 people that he drafted. This pasuk vayorek es chanecham. What does that word vayorek mean? Rav or Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel disagree what the word vayorek means. Chad omer sheherikon v'torah. One says that herikon with Torah. Now that itself has two different meanings. The Ran gives two explanations. One is that herikon means that he encouraged them with the Torah that he had taught them, and in the schus of that they were able to win the war. So even though the Gemara had said before he shouldn't have drafted them in the first place, but the fact is they were strengthened and they were enabled to win the war because of the schus of the Torah that they learned. And the other explanation, the Ran says, is the other way around. Herikon is Moloshin Vaborek. He emptied them of their Torah by using them for this forced labor, by drafting them for the army, and therefore, he emptied them out of the Torah that they had been learning. So that's one opinion. The other one says that he encouraged them with gold. Herikon is related to the word Yirakrak, which is a word meaning bright gold. Yirakrak, the pasuk in Kapitel Samaches of Tilim. So therefore, it means Herikon, Meloshin Yirakrak. He offered them a lot of gold to go to war. Now, why would he do that? Marsha brings from the Medrash. The reason is because this way they'll have a lot of treasure with them already. That way, they'll be more focused on Atzolos Nefashis and not focused on taking the spoils for themselves. Like this, if they weren't compensated in advance, they might think to themselves, well, you know what? If we're going to war, we might as well take as much of the spoils as we want for ourselves. And the whole point was, Avraham says afterwards to the king of Sodom, "V'loy tayma ani hashayut yes Avraham." So therefore, we had to give them money in advance to prevent them from thinking that way. Marsha also brings from the Medrash, says that another meaning, Herikon, also means he emptied out anybody who's afraid to go, because he announced to them the Psukim in Parshas Shoftim that anybody who's afraid to go, Miyat Yishar Hayore Barach Halevov, should leave the army. Okay, so those are various meanings of the word Vayorek. So next, when it says Shmona also Shloish Meis, it says there were 318 of them. So Omer of Ami Ba'ab of Eliezer Kneged Kulam. Eliezer was equal in power and in power and in schusim to all of them. The Ikadami Zehu Eliezer. Another opinion is that the 318 actually refers exclusively to Eliezer. Eliezer b'chushbona hachehavi, because the gematria of Eliezer is 318. So therefore, in other words, it means that Avraham took along only himself and Eliezer, and not 318 people, because he had Eliezer who's equal, because of the gematria of his name is equal to 318. Marshall points out, the Pasuk does say at the end of it, he had Onur, Eshkol, and Mamre were involved, but like Rashi says on the Pesukim over there, they were Yoshwala Kalim, they stayed behind to guard the equipment while Avraham and Eliezer were staying over here, went to war. So on the face of it, it seems to be it's a machloikus, whether in fact there were all 318 of them, or whether there was Reb Eliezer. A very interesting thing I saw, there was a Talmud Chacham lived in London in the last few decades. He was nifter about 25 years ago, named Reb Alter Shloime Halpern. He wrote a couple of svarim, a couple of serious sifrei limud, but aside from that, he also wrote a book of stories for children. I'm sure everybody here has seen it at one time or another, the prison and other tales of faith, it's called. And he pictures it over there that Avraham is calling on his people to join and fight this Milchemes Mitzvah, and everybody's afraid to come forward. And then Eliezer steps forward, and that breaks the ice, and then others step forward as well. So in that sense, then, it can be both, that Eliezer is credited, like the whole 318, because he's the first one to step forward. So it's an interesting fact. Here's another thing that we should know about Avraham. Ben Gimel Shonim Hikr Avraham as Boyle. Avraham first recognized Hashem when he was 3 years old. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ekev Asheshama Avraham Bakoili. Hashem says to Yitzchak, Ekev, as a result of that Avraham listened to my voice, and as a reward for that, and therefore I'm going to give you brachas. Now, the Shnoisav Shal Avraham Chutz Mishloisha Ekev B'chushbona Meyev Hashem V'tarting. The gematria of the word Ekev is 172. Avraham lived to 175. So therefore we see that so 3 years old, he first recognized the Eibishter, and therefore for Ekev years, for 172 years, he was serving the Eibishter. There's a medrash, by the way, where Avraham feels bad about it, that it comes out. Now, the Rambam describes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah at the beginning, the Rambam gives the whole historical overview of how Avodah Zarah came about in the first place, and how Avraham first counteracted it, and so on and so forth. And the Rambam makes a point over there that up until that point, Avraham was serving Avodah Zarah together with everybody else there. So the Medrash mentions that Avraham felt very bad about it, and the Eibishter tells him that, no, don't you worry, it's like all of that has been cleaned up, and then his truva is like a truva me'ava, that the Zonis Nasa Leikazachis, and therefore it can be considered in retrospect that all of his years were serving the Eibishter even before that. By the way, different midrashim. The Rambam, by the way, mentions over there that Avraham was 40 when he hikar as boyle. And there are various midrashim that give various other ages. The standard explanation is that it wasn't a one-time thing. Avraham kept on discovering more and more about the Eibishter. 3 years old, as we all learn as kids, then he first realized that the sun, the moon, everything always sets and goes away, and there has to be one Eibishter that runs it all. And then as he got older, and as he got to be 40, and then 48, and then another midrash says 50, then he was discovering more and more about the Eibishter. And then at 52, Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, is when he and Sarah actually started working on being Megayer people, which is why that age, he was born in the year 1948. When he was 52, comes to the year 2000, since Ma'aseh Bereishis, that begins Shnei Alafim Torah. At that point begins the 2,000 years of Torah, begins with Avraham and Sarah going on Mitzrayim and making Gerim. And Nefesh Hashem also B'choron. What? So Lech Lecha actually picks up when Avraham is 75. The beginning of Lech Lecha is Avraham is 75 years old, is in the year 2023. And then we said before, it's possible that some of the events in Parshas Lech Lecha may be out of order. The Bris Ben Absarim, according to many opinions, was when Avraham was 70, which is 5 years earlier. And then the war with the four kings, Tosfos says, was when Avraham was 73. So the events may be out of order, some of them, but in any case, that's where Lech Lecha begins. Yeah, there's a sikha, actually, where the Rebbe talks about, you know, it's interesting. You don't have, like this, Abraham was accomplishing tremendous things in Haran all those years, and you don't have anything about it in Torah Shabbat at all. The Parsha's Lech Lecha begins out of the blue, Vayim Hashem Avraham Lech Lecha, as though, like, what happened to all his meisim before that? There's really no hint of them in Torah Shabbat Sad. And there's a sikha where the Rebbe explains, because that's meant to stress the point that ultimately the Eved's choice of Avraham and of the Jewish people is not based on our mice, and it's rather based on an atmospheric connection between the Eibishter and us. So therefore, the Torah makes it sound as though Avraham was some random person and Hashem spoke to him to stress that point. Okay. Speaking of gematrios, now the Gemara brings another one. The Amar of Ami Ba'aba, it's also from the same Amar, Rav Ami Ba'aba. Well, it's all connected because Rav Ami Ba'aba is saying these things. We just said Rav Ami Ba'aba had said about the 318 in Eliezer, and he says about the 172 years of Abraham. So now here's another gematria related thing that he says. The Amar of Ami Ba'aba has Satan the gemat b'chushbana tlasmei b'shitin ba'aba havu. The name has Satan is gematria 364. Now we usually think of the name as just Satan, but the fact is that in every place, Marshall points out, in every place in Tanakh where it speaks of him, it always has it with the hey. It always has it with the hey idea. Vayomer Hashem al Hasatan, you have an Eov, and in Zechariah, and in other places, so therefore the hey can be treated as part of his name. So the Gematria is 364. Here the Gemara doesn't spell out what that means. The Gemara in Yuma explains that what that teaches us is there are 365 days in a year, in a solar year, that is. So that represents the idea that 364 days a year, the Satan has the ability to accuse the Jewish people. But on Yom Kippur, the one day, the 365th day, he has no ability to do that. It's represented by the fact that the name of the Gematria of his name is 364. There's a lot of interesting points in that. Yun Yaakov points out one problem with that is a Jewish year is usually 354 days. So we're 365 days is a solar year. And after all, in one solar year, there can be two Yom Kippurs. So how does that work out? Poshet Pshat, you would say, is the average is 365, because since we have leap years, the whole point is to make it equal with the solar year. So in the long run, you have approximately 365 days in a Jewish year on average over the long run. We find by the Ketores, for example, that they had 365 mana per year. But anyway, Ian Yaakov gives a different point that the first year after the Eibishter created a world, he brings from a Medrash that it was actually an Ibur year. That being the case, then that first year was actually 380 some days. So that first year, there was a Yom Kippur, and every year after that, therefore, we can say that the Yom Kippur belongs to only one solar year and not to two. So it justifies the calculation of a year. There's some place in explanation, I don't remember now where, that also points out what's the extra hay is. The fact is, okay, Marsha is saying we're treating the hay as though it was part of the name, because every place that always calls him Hasatan, but another point is the hay also represents the 5 days from Yom Kippur until Sukkot. The Medrash says that when it says about the first day of Sukkot, or Kaftim Lachem by Yom HaRishon, How is it Yom HaRishon? It's the 15th of the month. And the Medrash says, Rishon L'chesh Ben Avonis. It's like the first day for a new count of Averis for the year. Like a person's Averis have been forgiven on Yom Kippur. And the 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, as we all know every year, we're running around hither and yon doing mitzvahs. So therefore, like the Satan doesn't have the ability to accuse us during that time either, because we're so busy with mitzvahs. So you have 5 more days, aside from Yom Kippur itself, where also the Satan has no ability to accuse. So you have that. You have a lot of other interesting points in that. There's an interesting point that Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz makes in the Eitz Yosef refers over here to Yaris Dvash from Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, who makes a nice point about this. He says, you know, we say the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are considered like Yom HaArichta. They're considered for many purposes in halacha, like one long day. So in effect, really what it is in a certain sense, you could say the year consists of only 364 days. So therefore, that first year, the Eibishter took that long day and split it in two to create the 2 days that we have nowadays. But therefore, so you have like one day that wasn't put under the dominion of the Satan in the first place. And that's what we're saying, the one day a year, the 365th day, which is Yom Kippur. Okay, the Amar of Ami Ba'aba, here's another gematria that has to do with, here's another gematria related thing, also having to do with Avram. Ksiv Avram uchtiv hu Avraham. First he was called Avram without the hay, and then he was renamed Avraham with the hay. What's the significance of the hay? The tchila himlichay Hakadosh Baruch Hu Avraham al masayim va'aboyim shloisha evorim. Originally, Hashem gave Avraham dominion over 243 of his limbs. In other words, a person has bechira chofshes. A person can choose: is he going to use his hands, his feet, his various other body parts for mitzvahs, or the opposite? So at first, Avraham was given the ability, like any other person, to control 243 of his evorim, to be careful not to that they shouldn't be susceptible to aveiros. But you have five that are missing, because usually you have a person's eyes and ears are generally not under his control. A person can't help what he sees. He can, as soon as he sees something that he shouldn't be seeing, he can turn away, but meanwhile he's already seen it. The same thing, a person hears something that's also automatic, he can't really control it. And the Rosh HaGvia, the tip of the male Aver, is also something that's very hard for a person to control. So all of a sudden, after Avraham had a bris, al masayim va'aboyim shmoyne evarim, then Hashem gave him full control over all 248. The Elohim, the missing five, were Shteinayim, or Shteyaznayim, the two eyes, the two ears, v'rosh hagviya, and the tip of the Aver. Now he has full control that now, like, he can determine what he's going to see and what he's not going to see and what he's going to hear and what he's not going to hear and what he's going to have and not have a taiva towards. Marsha points out another way of looking at it is that the Gemara is mentioning these five Evarim, but there is the point that they're involuntary, but another way of looking at it, Marsha says, is that out of a person's five senses, hearing and seeing are more ruchniistic senses. The other ones, taste, smell, and touch, are more gashmius oriented. So hearing and seeing are more ruchnius oriented. So therefore, we said that Hashem tells Avraham with the bris milah, v'heyeh somim, you will be complete, meaning that you'll have the greatest milus of seichel and amidus. So now it means that also Hashem gave him control over these two more spiritually oriented senses, that now we can use them purely for ruchni. For ruchniistic purpose is to improve his seichel and amidus and become tamim through that. In fact, Rashi on Chumash brings this drasha on that pasuk. Yisalach lefanei ve'yesamim, that Hashem tells him now, as a result of the milah, you'll be renamed Avraham, and you'll now, your gematria of your name will be 248, and you'll have a shlita, and you'll have dominion over these five as well. So it all represents that idea that the Eibishter is giving him an extra degree of shleimus. And we have in Tanya these days where it talks about that the others were the Merkava, that they're completely bottled to rots in the Elyon Kol Yemehem. So that all fits with this point that Avraham was given that ability, that Avraham was given that ability to do that. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well, why we're mentioning the eyes, the ears, and the bris milah, is because we know Rashi mentions on the pasuk before he had his bris milah, he couldn't experience nevuah from Hashem standing; he would fall down. So therefore, like, he couldn't see clearly and couldn't hear clearly. So now, as a result of the bris milah, now he's able to see and now he's able to hear, and therefore that's also another meaning of that Hashem gave him control over those parts of his body. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugola. Your Gimel Shvat. So we have the Torah Chadoshim Ititetze, the famous idea that there's going to be a new Torah that comes out from Hashem. Interesting, by the way, you know, we always think of that as that's how the actual Pasuk goes. It doesn't. The actual Pasuk goes Torah Meititetze. The fact that it's Torah Chadosh actually comes from a Medrash in Vayikra Rabba. Anyway, so what does this mean, Torah Chadoshim Ititetze? Torah is really on a level that only because Hashem himself brings it down to us that we're able to reveal it. It wouldn't be able to be revealed by a person himself. But the point is that it will come down here. It'll be able to be comprehended and understood by a person's seichel. So in other words, what does this mean? Mashiach is going to have this Torah Chadasha at a level of Nevuah. But now it's not just going to be Nevuah, some abstract thing that you can't understand with Seichel, and it's just that's the way it is. It's going to be also Malubish in Chochmas, Bos of Adam, so that Mashiach will be able to teach everybody Kol Ha'am, as the Rambam says, to teach them, because they'll be Chachamim Gdolim, and they'll know hidden things, and understand the knowledge of the Eibishter as much as a person is able to. So even these high things of Torah Chadasha will be able to be understood with a person's Seichel. There is, by the way, one of the projects of Chutz Sichas for this week. Chelek Chavav talks about this point. This is it's a hard run on Rambam from the first time when Limud Rambam was just starting in Tavshin Dalad Mem, and the Rebbe develops the idea over there that Yoidim Dvorim Astrumim means we'll have the ability to fully understand Ma'aseh Bereishis, and Yoidim Das Vordim Kafikarei Chadam means that we'll have a tremendous amount of ability to understand to understand Ma'aseh Merkava, and therefore to understand more and more about the Eibishter. But still, there's a limitation. And it says still the Eibishter is built Baal-Gvul, and we're Baal-Gvul, so therefore only be Kifishbarach Adam and not more than that. But it'll still be much more of a greater Koyach than we have now. Okay. Continuing with halachas on Shabbos, we were talking about a case where a person is dangerously ill. We talked about if doctors say that he's dangerously ill, or if the doctors say that not, but the patient himself does. So now what happens that an expert doctor, Jew or Goy, or anybody else who's knowledgeable in these things, he might say, right now this guy is not in danger yet, but if you don't do such and such prophylactic measure, then he's going to get sicker and he might come the day sakana. So then even if the patient himself says he doesn't need, then we still mechal Shabbos for him. If the doctor says, and likewise, if the doctor says, for example, if they don't give him such and such cure, he's for sure going to die. And now, what if the doctor says, we don't know. If you give him this cure, he might survive. But if he doesn't, if you don't, then he's definitely going to die. That's also a valid reason to be Machal Shabbos. You're going to say the doctor himself is saying it's only a might, but that's a good enough reason, even on a suffix like that, to be Machal Shabbos for his treatment.